The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, this is Ted Wright. I love word of mouth marketing almost as much as I love the Marketing Book podcast. So stay tuned as we talk about my new book, Fizz, with my good friend, Douglas Burdett.
Welcome to the Marketing Book podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which is all about helping you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, I'm joined by Ted Wright, and we're going to talk about his book, Fizz, Harness the Power of Word of Mouth Marketing to Drive Brand Growth. Ted Wright is the CEO of Fizz, a word-of-mouth marketing firm he founded in 2000 and which has become a global leader in word-of-mouth marketing with clients on every continent. Ted has contributed to several consumer revolutions in the U.S., including the resurgence of Pabst Blue Ribbon amongst urban hipsters, and he's helped take his clients such as Intuit, AT&T, Intel, and many others to the next level and beyond. An alumnus of Booz Allen and Hamilton, Ted holds an MBA with honors from the University of Chicago and is a graduate of Hampden City College, which, if you're from the South, particularly Virginia, that's kind of a big deal. Ted also enjoys great bourbon and drives too fast, but never at the same time. Ted, congratulations on Fizz and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas. It's really great to be here.
Now, I should disclose that since you are a Hampden Sydney graduate, I am wearing a bow tie and a seersucker jacket for the interview.
As well you should, young man. I'm glad you have the decency to dress for the event.
Right, right. So, Ted, please explain for the listener what word of mouth marketing is and what it's not.
All right. So what it is, so word of mouth marketing, I guess to start back at the beginning, is really old, right? It's at least 11,000 years that we can tell. And so word of mouth is two people talking about things. Word of mouth marketing is a company organizing its most influential consumers, these people who love to share stories with their friends, are intrinsically motivated, and are always looking for new things. And if you take those people and you organize them in such a way, and we can talk about how we get that done, they will go and they will share the story broadly throughout their social network. And 70% of those conversations are face-to-face, 20% are over the phone, and only 10% in the North American marketplace are in the land of ones and zeros and Twitters and Facebooks and Snapchat and all the rest of that. Mm-hmm. So the vast majority of these conversations are happening face-to-face. So that is what word-of-mouth marketing is the organization of all of those conversations out there and driving them in a particular way that is most helpful for your brand, your company, or your personal self. And how you're doing that is you're really thinking about sort of two platforms. One, how do I share my story with as many people as I can as a brand without interrupting or intercepting them? And then also knowing that 10% of my audience is going to be this influencer, these people that way over index on sharing stories and are really basically the movers for the entire US market, right? Mm-hmm. Ed Keller did a book called The Influentials. And you know, his math that has been borne out now over study, over study, over study, is that one North American in 10 drives the other 9 into buying everything. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what word of mouth is.
Well, it seems, from reading the book, it seems somewhat more difficult than just buying an ad, but it has much greater power when it's actually done correctly. And I think you mentioned Jonah Berger's book also about the percentage of word of mouth that is actually online. And it's, I think he said it was only 7%.
Yeah, you know, Jonah's a great guy, and we go back and forth. So 7, 10, you know.
It's just much lower than I had thought.
It's really low. And so here's kind of the reason why, and then we can get into the technical pieces. But just sort of the common sense way of thinking. People have been communicating face-to-face with each other for at least 15,000 years that we know of, right? And over that time, there are a lot of different ways that people have figured out how to communicate. So technically speaking, when you are talking to somebody, there are over 300 known ways that people communicate with each other, including voice modulation, how they dress. Obviously, you have dressed to communicate today.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You know, you're very welcome. You know, people notice these things. Hand gesticulation, sort of all of these different ways, all these cultural norms, digital communication. If you were at DARPA at the beginning of the internet, you know, you and Tim Berners-Lee and everybody else were there. Mm-hmm. You've been communicating with people for 20 years digitally. Most of us have been communicating digitally 10 years or less. So A, we're much less practiced. And B, there are only 6 ways that people know how to communicate to each other digitally, including emoticons, vocabulary choice, the cap lock button, bold, all of these things. So when you think that the average word of mouth conversation in the United States is 32 seconds long, so it's not like I'm waiting for you and your wife to come walking down the aisle at the grocery store and I'm going to jump out at you and yell, "Hey, Jif, peanut butter is great," and I'm going to sort of run away, right? We know each other.
Well, that's the impulse of a lot of marketers still.
Yes, that is the impulse of a lot of marketers. But what that does is that drives people away, mm-hmm. because the average U.S. consumer gets hit with 14,000 commercial messages a day. In order for a human, any average North American human, to process that much information in a day, it would take them around 47 hours. So there is not enough time to process all the messages. So what we have done over the last 10 years is we've really started to ignore. And we have really started to ignore broadcast. And so when you think about, so there's the ignoring because all of broadcast has become white noise. Mm-hmm. There's the technical advantages we have with the mute button and the TiVo and the ad blocker, so we don't even see them mm-hmm. anymore. And then you add the third factor, which is in survey after survey after survey, 8 out of 10 North Americans will say that they do not trust the companies to tell the truth in their advertising. Juxtaposed against those same people say, but 7 out of 10 of us believe that our friends are tell us the truth about products and services that they like.
And they'll trust perfect strangers' opinions on reviews.
They will, and particularly so those reviews that are online reviews, but they only, when you look at Yelp and you look at TripAdvisor and you look at all the research about those, the most trusted reviews are those that at the beginning talk a little bit about who they are as people. So my wife and I are going to Brazil last year for the World Cup. And so there were families that would post. So it was a mom from whatever, like, "Oh, we're doing this. And, you know, these are the ages of our kids, blah, blah, blah." And then there were also a lot of English football fans. And they were going to Brazil to drink as much beer as humanly possible and spend as little money possible on anything else except beer and tickets mm-hmm. and not necessarily and pretty much always in that order, right? So when my wife Christina, she would read these reviews, she could immediately put herself into that other person's position.
Right.
And since we're not big Leeds United supporters and we're not really thinking how do we drink 40 beers a day, even those reviews could have been very trusted by her, they were not relevant
right,
to her.
Right.
So where a review or a story is trusted, if it's interesting to the influencer, if it's relevant to the influencer's audience, and it's authentic to the way they currently either understand the brand or the specific or the category.
Mm-hmm. Ted, we've been hearing about word of mouth marketing, you know, 10,000 years or maybe longer. Why has it become more important in recent years?
So in recent years, so what happened was the United States broadcast really started to happen in the mid-30s. So and first most used by President Roosevelt to communicate with other people when he was doing his fireside chats mm-hmm. in World War II, and also the revolution of music and that you could get this big expensive box. What happens is once you're in whatever media market you're in and you've had 35 years of ubiquitous color television, so at least 85% of the population has daily access to color TV for 35 years. Once you hit that 35th year, an inflection point happens. And that inflection point happens is that people just in general, the general public realizes that just because it's on TV or in a magazine does not necessarily make it true. We basically have been lied to as a people. Organizations, government leaders, companies have gone on and said stuff and done stuff on TV, and then it turns out that that wasn't true. So what has happened is that in the United States, that 35th year happened in 1997. Once that 35th year happens, the efficacy of broadcast starts to decline. And it takes about 10 years to hit sort of where its bottom point is going to be. So between 97 and 2007, newspapers started to really have a problem. Magazines started to be having worth a problem. Fewer and fewer people were watching specific television shows. There was a proliferation of other networks because people were saying, okay, I know what these guys are showing, but now I'm very interested in this. So by the time you get into the mid-2000s, nobody is really using broadcast anymore as their number one source of information, and they're looking for something else. At the same time, we have, you know, the Great Recession, and everybody in North America, we starts getting more and more demands on both their time and their money. So that hastens the move away from where they used to get their information in general, which was broadcast, magazine, television, radio, name it. And they moved from sort of the theater of broadcast to the cafe of conversation. And so they're asking their friends, hey, I see that you like phones a lot. I don't really care about phones, but I need one. And so where should I go buy my $400 phone or cars or whatever? And then, of course, with the rise of the internet and with Google basically taking all information and indexing it for us, now it's very easy for us to go online and check the stories that we're getting from our friends and to make sure that there's efficacy there. So the dollar amount, if something is cost more than $1,000 in somebody's time or treasure, they'll talk to their friends and then they'll go to the internet and check, make sure everything is kosher, make sure everything lines up, and then they'll make their purchase decision. If it costs less than $1,000, they basically just take their friend's word for it. Mm-hmm. Because we're all busy. And because we have influencers, these people that are driving all of this commerce, are really only influential in our experience of three categories or less. So just because I might know a lot about cars, I don't necessarily know a lot about phones. Or I'm not passionate about phones like I'm passionate about cars, so I'm not out there collecting all this information. So the big switch has been this place that we used to get all this information from. We no longer trust that. And that place is called broadcast. And because there's so much more pressure on us making right decisions with both our time and our money, we have migrated as a population into this having conversation with friends. And that's what's driving commerce now, which is why you've seen the rise of the importance of word of mouth and really the decline of efficiency of broadcast and the ability of broadcast to move markets. It rarely happens now. Yeah. I can count on one hand in the last 5 years an advertising campaign that has really made a material difference mm-hmm. in a company.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about how everybody has most I guess companies might have 10% or excuse me, it's you mentioned 10% are influencers. So at a high level, because of the limitations of time here, how does a company of any size start to identify what an influencer is and who they are, and then how they go about, you know, enlisting this army of influencers? Obviously, there's an entire book about that, but if we could focus in on that, it might help people start to understand how to get their arms around this.
So, Douglas, you ask a really good question, and it's really sort of, who are these influencers and how do I identify them? And the second question is, how do we get them to go, you know, march along with me? Mm-hmm. All right. So let's just talk about influencers in general. So it's a good point to remember a couple of things. One, influencers are a personality type. It is not a job title, right? And just because you have a lot of people that follow you on Twitter or follow you on Facebook or watch you on TV does not necessarily make you influential. Here are the three personality traits of somebody who is an influencer. They like to try new things because they're new. They like to share stories with their friends, and they are intrinsically motivated. We as companies, as brands, as small businesses do not have to identify influencers. In fact, it's remarkably expensive. It costs almost $600 a person to identify somebody as an influencer and do it at scale. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to spend a penny in IDing them. They will identify themselves to you as a company because you are going to be out there and you're going to be sharing your story. A story has three components that make it worth talking about, worth noticing if you're an influencer. Is it interesting to the influencer? Is it relevant to the influencer's audience? And is it authentic to how the influencer currently sees either the brand category in general or the brand in specific? So an interesting, relevant, and authentic story. What you all need to do out there who are listening, if you want to do word of mouth, is you need to say, okay, here's what my story is. It truly is interesting, relevant, and authentic. And then next question is, how am I going to go share that in a way that doesn't interrupt people or intercept people, right? Worst marketing tactic in North America today is when you're in the mall and somebody comes up and says, hey, can I wipe some of this Dead Sea hand cream on your hand? And, you know, right? Yes, I know you're laughing.
Or the perfume counter.
Or the perfume counter, right? These are our two examples, right? Who goes to the mall to get sprayed or wiped on unless you're actually walking right to the counter, right? So that's classic interruptive. Mm-hmm. Classic interceptive is obviously calling somebody on the phone during dinner time and trying to sell them something. Who in the world really is making any money off of that? So don't interrupt and don't intercept. Just share. Because what you have to understand is broadcasts assume that everybody about had the mental faculties of a 10-year-old boy. Word of mouth assumes that everybody can make their own best decision for themselves. So your job as a brand is to share the most interesting story about you. And because we have 330 million people who live in America, there's plenty of people who will love your product. You just need to go out there and share with them. Influencers, that 10% of the population that's going to show up, is going to really love your product. Their story gets shared when they tell one friend and they tell another and so on and so on. In a year, that story will get shared in excess of 40,000 times. And the believability of that story is 1,000%, technically three orders of magnitude, so 1,000% more believable than the same story if the company was telling it to you on advertising in whatever medium you want to. So more believable and more spread. The other 90% of the population, those non-influencers, their story gets shared six times on average.
And that leads us to another point of it's not an immediate return that so many marketers want, but for those that have a slightly longer game, they can grow deeper roots and it is more organic. But how then ultimately are organizations measuring the effectiveness of their word of mouth marketing or just measuring it?
They are measuring it through increased sales, which is the only measurement that anybody in marketing should ever really be worrying about. Mm-hmm. Impressions and this and that and the other, 100% hokum.
Mm-hmm. Vanity Silly. Metrics.
Useless. It's money, because that's what the board cares about. That's what Wall Street cares about. That's what they're going to use you to pay to give you more of, mm-hmm. right? How are you adding, right? There's a famous CMO at Coca-Cola. He's like, marketing is about selling more stuff to more people more often for more money. So at our company, we like to get judged on, are your sales up? Now, you talked about timing. If anyone's listening to this and their boss is like, oh my God, we have to be so much bigger in the next 60 days, feel free
I'm
to
laughing
just,
to keep from crying.
Yeah, exactly. Just feel free to hang up now or stop listening or however you're conveying this, because we are of no help to you, nor is anything else. Mm-hmm. Broadcast, you can't go out and buy a bunch of ads that are going to, you can, and you can get a bunch of people to drew traffic and come in and some of them will buy stuff. But the cost of media so far outstrips the profit that you'll make from that is you will be what's known as value destroying. All of the other enlightened companies out there, and we have, you know, big, huge companies, they're like, you're right, this whole quarter by quarter thing doesn't really work for us. Where can you get us at the end of the year? Ah, a year. Now that's an interesting time scale, because that says, okay, and as fast as I can corporately blink, I'm going to be much bigger and I'm going to start seeing sales growth. And instead of growing at 3% a year, I can grow 7 or 8. And then the next year I can grow 20. And why can you do that? And why is word of mouth so inexpensive? Because all of the cost in broadcast is basically either renting or buying the network, right? Mm-hmm. In word of mouth, the network already exists and you can neither buy them nor bribe your way in. You have to earn your way in. And if you earn your way in, those people that are huge fans of pens or phones or glasses or whatever, they're going to tell all their friends, oh my God, Warby Parker, $99, blah, 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 blah. The Warby Parker story. Mm-hmm. Warby Parker could come and tell me that all they want to. You're a company. I'm an average US consumer. I know you're trying to sell me something, blah, blah, blah. When my fashion-y friend who also wears glasses says, you know, I have 6 pairs of these things and they're only 99 bucks a piece. And so that's why I'm rocking the red and I'm rocking the grass. Like, 99 bucks, you say, and they're good? It's like, yeah, they're just as good as the $600 pairs I used to buy. Cool, I'll go check that out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thus, Warby Parker, thus Apple, thus all the other things. The only reason to do broadcast at this point is to remind two people in close physical proximity to share a story about a brand or a service or a product that they've already heard from somebody else.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff. And to you listeners, you know that's how you're buying things. Ted, what are some of the biggest myths about word of mouth marketing?
So, you know, one of the biggest...
The ones that really drive you crazy.
Well, one of the myths is that, you know, that we already talked about is sort of the measurement thing, like, well, other things can happen at a quarter. And I'm like, you know, they can't. And at this point, you know, we work with really big companies and there's nobody that really believes that. I know that people get measured quarter by quarter, but really at the end of the day, they get measured on an annual basis. I think the other myth is that word of mouth can be, you know, so much less expensive in the very beginning. So word of mouth is less expensive than broadcast, but it's not like, hey, what do you got for $50,000? I'm like, I wish I had a $50,000 answer. I could sell those all day. I don't. Mm-hmm. It's expensive because you have to go and have conversations with people. And you have to be able to be comfortable that just because Doug and I really like this product, it does not mean that I'm going to go call Doug on the phone and say, oh my God, you know, because he's busy, I'm busy. But when we see each other, it's swim team practice or something, and our kids are after church or whatever.
We run in club.
At the bourbon club. I'm like, hey, Doug, I know this about you. I know this about this brand, product, or service. I need to make sure that you guys meet. Like, I'm working as a matchmaker. And what's interesting about the Dougs of the world and the people that influencers are communicating with, not only do they know that they trust your story because you've been sharing these, but an influencer's personality really is established, you know, at least by the time they're 10 or 12 years old. So I've got 10, 15, 20, maybe even 30 years of practicing being a storyteller. So not only am I very efficient and very talented at telling a story, and not only am I very trusted, but all of the people that I've told stories to in the past, when they run into like, hey, I've got to go buy a new car, I should go call Ted because he knows all about cars. And listeners will get these. You know, if you're really into wine or you're really into phones or computers or whatever, you get a call from somebody and they say, hey, I'm here at the wine store and this happened to me today or this is where I'm going and I need to pick up out a bottle. What should I do? And if you're really into wine, you'll ask them a couple, three questions and you'll put them to something and they'll really enjoy that. So the cool thing about influencers for a brand is not only are influencers out there sharing a story with you, but everybody in their network is calling upon them for expertise in the category in which you are trying to sell stuff. So mm-hmm. it's very efficient and it's very effective.
Well, Ted, as we wrap up, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Well, what I would hope it would be is I would hope it would be an understanding of the power of this and a willingness to experiment. Like, okay, I'm Applebee's. I'm not going to stick all of my money into this. I'm not going to pull all my media and say, ha, word of mouth, this is it. But I, but you know, let's experiment. Let's say, okay, let's say all this stuff is true. And of my, and I'm just picking on Applebee's because I have some swag here in the office from Applebee's that somebody sent me. Applebee's, let's just say they have $100 million that they spend in marketing a year. I'm going to take $2 million and I'm going to put it against an experiment. I'm going to take 2% of my budget and I'm just going to experiment with this thing. Because if it takes off and it's right, you know, next year maybe I move 4. And in 5 years, 10 years, you know, we'll see what happens. But for right now, let's do a little experiment. And then what will happen is it'll be some version of amazing. It'll be way more powerful than anything anybody's using right now. And then you'll be like, huh, where are other places where we can do this? Because now I have some traction. Now I have something I can point to in my company that's like, this is me. So where there are a dozen VPs, there are only 3 SVPs. And now I can be shortlist for that mm-hmm. next job up.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ted, let me ask you a couple questions that are popular with the listeners. Is there a recent marketing book that you've read that you would recommend to the listeners?
Well, of course, you know, my wife really thinks that mine was really good, so please feel free. You know, I did actually. So there's a guy sitting on my desk right here. There's a guy named Mark Schaefer, and he's written a book called The Content Code.
Yes.
And I don't know if listeners are familiar with Mark, but, you know, the honest truth is guys who do digital and people who do digital, I look askance because I know the power of face-to-face, but I was completely impressed with Mark when I heard him speak. And then I actually spent my money to buy his book and I went out and bought 4 more and I've sent them to other people that I think can use them. So Content Code, Mark Schaefer, I'm very impressed with.
I agree 100%. I've read it and we've interviewed him for that book on this show. And it is really, it's a big book. I mean, it's a important book.
I think so.
Are there any marketing books you are looking forward to reading that you've heard about coming down the pike?
So I am, and for the listeners, I am actually more interested in, because by the time it gets to book form, you know, if you follow the field, you know, these people have been talking about this and they've been writing about it for a couple of years. So I'm really more on sort of articles that are coming out. Mm-hmm. I think Ann McGill at the University of Chicago is doing some amazing stuff right now. I know I went to the U of C and so I read a lot of that stuff, but Ann was at Northwestern when I was thinking about B school and I actually saw her speak there and I was like, wow, you're awesome. And then she moved to Chicago. And so that was one of the reasons that I chose Chicago. So I think she's doing some great stuff.
And she publishes on the school's site or she has her own blog?
No, she publishes on the school site.
Oh, we'll make sure to link that up in the show notes.
Yeah, I think it's really good. And there's another woman out there. She's at Northwestern now. Her name is Aparna Labrue, Labroo. And Aparna is doing some amazing things, kind of, how do people make decisions?
Mm.
And then lastly, the guy who wrote Nudge, he's got a new book out, I think called Misunderstanding or Misunderstood, or he's got some catchy title.
Okay.
And he's probably shortlist for a Nobel Prize. I think he is one of the godfathers of behavioral economics. And so I think that's where we're going. So if I was running a little Ace Hardware in some little, you know, in Lexina, Kansas or whatever, that's who I'd be reading because they really explain how things work. And once me as a person, once I understand how things work, I can figure out how to make the machine work for whatever I need. But it's insight into how things work. I think that's really amazing.
Mm, okay. Well, we're going to have some good show notes here. I know I'm going to be doing when we get off the line is researching these folks. Ted, how can listeners find out more about you and your book?
So the book, you just basically go on Amazon and type in fizz and word and you'll see it. Or you can just type in Fizz and you can find it. Also at all independent bookstores across the country. And it's very easy to find us. You just Google Fizz and Ted, which is my first name, and you will, there's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, come see us if we can help. We're glad to talk with you.
Okay, so the name of the book is Fizz, Harness the Power of Word-of-Mouth Marketing to Drive Brand Growth. The author is Ted Wright. Ted, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for having this. I listen to the podcast, and I appreciate the information that I get.
Oh, great. Thank you. And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. Links to everything mentioned are in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the podcast newsletter to get notified of every new episode, its show notes, links, and other useful things. Also, at marketingbookpodcast.com, there are about 20 free marketing ebooks on a wide variety of topics that lots of people have found helpful. If you're one of the people who's left an iTunes or Stitcher review, I really appreciate it, and it has more impact than you might realize. A one-sentence review shoots the podcast way up in the listings. Finally, I get such a kick out of hearing from my listeners. It really makes my day. To send a message, just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and click on the Contact Podcast button. Got an idea or suggestion? Maybe I'm doing something wrong? Let me know. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. Till next time. We'll be right back.